This is Smart Choices for a Happier Life with Pamela Chambers, and this is Session 2.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Smart Choices for a Happier Life, where it's a community of people working together for social good. Let's share love, peace, and let's talk. Here's your host, Pamela Chambers.
Hello, everybody, and I'm so happy that you are here listening and learning. I'm here in Scottsdale, Arizona, and I am just thrilled to have my guest here this morning. My guest's name is Dr. Stevie Stanford, and Dr. Stanford is the Clinical Program Director at Copper Canyon Academy. Copper Canyon Academy is a residential treatment center for teenage girls who are 13 to 17 years of age. And Copper Canyon Academy was featured on the Dr. Phil Show. She will be sharing with you what kinds of teen girls are best fit for the program at Copper Canyon. She will also be talking about, you know, when we as parents are in over our heads with our teenage daughters. You know, when can we use such a program like this residential treatment center that they offer at Copper Canyon? So what actually goes on at these treatment centers for our teenage girls? And also, Dr. Stevie Stanford, she was a therapist at Copper Canyon Academy before she returned to school in 2008 to get her doctorate in counseling psychology. She is proficient in psychological testing. She's also published many articles in the area of eating disorders. She specializes in trauma, EMDR, and attachment disorders. I think you will all be very excited to hear what she has to say about these programs here at Copper Canyon. So let's welcome Dr. Stevie Stanford. All right, everybody, I want to welcome Dr. Stevie Stanford. She is the Clinical Director, Program Director at Copper Canyon Academy. So let's welcome Dr. Stevie Stanford. Do you like to be called Stevie, Dr. Stanford? What do you prefer?
Stevie works the best.
All right. So anyway, tell the audience how you got your name. I love the name Stevie, and I think it's such a cute story. She told me earlier, and I just wanted to share it with my audience. Go ahead.
Well, it was back in 78, so I'm sharing with everyone my age, and my parents were big Fleetwood Mac fans. So they, my dad's name is Steve, and so they thought it would be sort of a namesake for him, and also for their favorite artist at the time, Stevie Nicks. So they just thought it was cute.
I love it. It really makes you stand out with that name, I think.
But. Yeah.
All right, so tell our audience a little bit about how you got interested in the field of psychology.
Well, it was just always something that I was interested in. I all the way through elementary school, I was the person who everybody went to for their issues. And as I started looking at careers, I was just trying to figure out what I would love doing all day, every day. And I'm a talker. I love talking with people. I love talking with people about what their issues are. And so I took a brief stop off in between my bachelor's and my master's and became a yoga instructor and a massage therapist. So I ventured off a little bit, but I always knew that I was going to come back to psychology. And I really found that learning a little bit more about that mind-body has helped me to in my work now as a psychologist.
Ooh, and I'm a yoga fan. I love it. So now, how long have you been at Copper Canyon Academy?
I have been here now almost 2 years, but I actually worked here as a therapist before. I was here about 8 years ago and worked here for a few years and was, I applied to the PhD program thinking that I probably wouldn't get in my first try. And when I did get in, I was really bummed because now I had to make one of the hardest decisions of my life and decided to leave Copper Canyon to go back to get my PhD and thinking at the time that I probably wouldn't ever make it back this way. And so after I finished my PhD, I was working up on the Hopi Reservation and got a call from Copper Canyon that this position was available. And it's absolutely been my dream job. It's been so wonderful being able to come back and to be the clinical director, still do the therapy side of things, and be able to implement some changes that I wish would have happened back when I was a therapist. So it's kind of come full circle.
Ooh, awesome. And dream job. You couldn't ask for a more beautiful place. Copper Canyon, it's right in my own backyard, Sedona, Arizona. And it's a beautiful place, isn't it, Stevie?
It is. It's absolutely gorgeous. Sedona is about 20 minutes away from us. We're actually in Rimrock, so it's just a short drive, and you kind of go through this little rural area, and then all of a sudden turn the corner, and we've got these big, beautiful white buildings and big trees all over the place, and a creek in the back for the girls to go hang out at. So it's an amazing place to be able to come every day.
Well, I've heard great things about your program. And also, the very first place I heard about it was on the Dr. Phil show.
Oh, nice.
So tell us a little about, I know he endorses your program. So tell us a little bit about Dr. Phil's endorsement.
Yes, that has really been wonderful for us to have his support. And I think it's been wonderful for Copper Canyon, but for my grandma mostly, because that is her claim to fame with all of her friends. Anytime she ever meets anyone, she says, "My granddaughter works for a place that's on the Dr. Phil show." So she thinks that that is just about the coolest thing that's ever happened. But Dr. Phil got involved through our organization, Aspen Education. So we own a few therapeutic boarding schools, residential treatment centers, and wilderness programs. And so a lot of times when we have a girl who will come to us from the Dr. Phil show, she will do one of the wilderness therapy programs first and then come to us for the long-term treatment. So we are about a year-long program, and so the girls get to have sort of that normalcy of being at a boarding school that is also a college prep academy, yet they're getting that intense therapeutic side of things as well. So we work really well together with doing the wilderness as well.
Awesome. Now, what would be the typical profile of a student that goes to your school? I mean, what would the teen, you know, what kind of teen would do best at your program?
Well, I would say about 90% of our girls have oppositional defiant disorder. And I know most people are thinking, don't all teenagers have oppositional defiant disorder? But these are the kids that the parents are really feeling like they are out of control and that they're not able to keep them safe at home anymore. So there are those girls that have the oppositional defiant, and sometimes along with that is the substance abuse issues, because they're trying to figure out a way to feel better. And as we work with these girls, we often realize that it's not true addiction. It's not true substance abuse, but rather they're trying to feel better because they have depression or anxiety, or they've had some sort of trauma that's happened to them. So as we work through the substance abuse issues, we sort of peel away those layers and are able to look at what some of the underlying issues are. And some of our girls don't come in with substance abuse issues, but usually if there isn't that substance abuse, there is the academic decline, the social difficulty. They have more of a difficulty fitting in with their peers, and so that will lend to some of those anxiety and depressive symptoms, to where they're not feeling good about themselves to be able to be at a regular high school and to be able to be in their home.
Right, because fitting in at the high school age is so vitally important to the teenager.
It is. Yeah, it's so hard. And so if they have some of those issues, like the reactive attachment disorder, or if they're on the spectrum, have a low level of Asperger's, or if they have some sort of social issues that they don't really feel like they fit in, that's just going to exacerbate any anxiety or depression that they might already have. And eventually sometimes get to the point where they don't feel like going to school and the parents can't get them to go to school. And so we do really well with those girls as well, helping them to get into an environment that is more supportive, and that they have girls around them who have had some of the same issues, and sort of all encompass them with their group therapy and their classes and their individual therapy, and fitting into that positive peer culture, it really helps them to propel themselves in the right direction socially.
So what kind of therapeutic programs do you offer there?
Well, we have they're all encompassing. So each therapist has no more than 10 girls on their caseload. And each caseload often has a variety of girls who have, you know, anything from the reactive attachment disorder to a primarily substance abuse diagnosis, or any one of the depression, anxiety, different issues going on there. And so each therapist will individualize their program from there. So we have a really strong recovery program. We have 12-step meetings on campus, relapse prevention. We do rational recovery. So just sort of whatever each girl feels like is gels with them and resonates with them to help them to find recovery. And then along with that, we have our equine therapy, which I'm so proud of our equine therapy program. Our equine therapist, her name is Belle Shook, and she's one of the pioneers in equine therapy. She's been doing it for 2 decades. And the work that she does with the girls and the horses is just phenomenal. We have girls that get stuck and regular talk therapy isn't working. And so we have them go down with Belle and the horses, and the progress that we see from them after that is just out of this world.
Ooh, that's awesome. Now, do you guys offer group therapy as well for the girls?
We do. Each one of our girls has 3 group therapy sessions a week. So, 3 of those sessions are a process group that will be with their individual therapist. And then we also have 1 day a week, a specialty group. So the specialty groups are really cool because each one of the therapists gets to pick something that they're really passionate about. So one of them is a DBT group, which we all know, dialectical behavior therapy, was developed for borderline personality disorder. Therefore, it's also very appropriate for teenage girls. They have all of those same issues of emotional dysregulation and distress tolerance and working on those DBT skills. Some of our other specialty groups that we have are for the girls that have been adopted. And I know we're going to talk a little bit more about that. That's one of our specialties here. But at any given time, we have 30 to 40% of our girls that have been adopted. So for them to be able to be in a group of all adopted girls, it really helps them to get that feeling of that people understand them and that feeling of belonging. And it also gives them a little bit of a mirror to see what some of the things that they're saying sound like when they hear it from someone else.
Well, yeah, and it's interesting that high of a percentage of adopted children are there. Why would that be? Do you think, as far as adoption playing into some of these disorders that you specialize in?
Well, when you look at the fact that in the general population, only 2 to 3% of people are adopted. Mm-hmm. Yet when you look at residential treatment facilities, it's 30 to 40% of people who have been adopted. And so that was something that really fascinated me and made me want to make it one of my specialties. So I've really done a lot of research in that area. And, you know, it just goes back to the age-old question of nature versus nurture. So there are a lot of things going on there where if they were from an overseas adoption and they have the reactive attachment disorders, or if they don't have the reactive attachment disorder and they're just a regular teenage girl, and you can imagine how difficult it is as a teenage girl trying to figure out who the heck you are. And then you add on top of that, that you don't really know where you came from. Your mom, who you don't really like very much because you're a teenage girl, isn't your quote unquote real mom, you know? And so there are all just this perfect storm of issues that comes up. And I think that it really decreases a person's sense of self and sense of self-efficacy. And so when they have some of those issues come up, that's why they end up in residential treatment.
Right, and attachment actually starts in the prenatal period, right, in the womb.
Mm-hmm. And there have been studies that have shown that when a woman who is pregnant is under unusual amount of stress, that when the baby is born, they're already at a disadvantage neuropsychologically. So their brain is underdeveloped from day one.
Oh, geez.
And so, yeah, when you think about a woman that ends up needing to give her baby up for adoption, while she's pregnant, there are a variety of things going on. Maybe she's too young. Maybe she's in a bad financial situation. Maybe she's using drugs. But whatever the situation may be, she's not taking care of that baby the best that she could. and not preparing as well as she could in most cases. And so when you think of it that way, that there isn't that attachment and attunement happening for the first 9 months, the baby kind of comes out at a disadvantage from day one. And then on top of that, the fact that their brain may be underdeveloped, they sort of start out with a disadvantage as far as the emotional development goes and their social skills go.
Gotcha. And I think all of us that have majored in psychology love the monkey experiment. Can you share with us, though, how important attachment is by that monkey experience? Just share with my audience, because I think it's so neat.
Yeah. Well, you know, it started back with in psychoanalysis. A lot of people thought that the reason why babies got attached to their caregiver was because they gave them food. You know, this object comes up to me. I'm hungry. The object gives me food. Therefore, I like the object. That it doesn't have anything to do with attuning to another human being. And so what the Harlow studies did in 1958 was that they put these monkeys in a room, and they had the choice between two artificial mothers. And one of the mothers was made of wire, but had a bottle that they could feed them. And the other mother had terry cloth, it was heated, it had a heartbeat, and every single time the monkey chose the mother that would give them the nurturing and the comforting rather than the food.
It's
so important. Even furthermore, when they would put the monkeys in separate rooms, if a monkey was in a room with the artificial mother that had the food but wouldn't comfort them, they would actually end up losing weight. They would actually end up losing their hair. They became neurotic and anxious. And so even though the other monkey that was in the room didn't have food but was comforted, the monkey that had the food would lose weight because they didn't have that attachment and that nurturing.
Jeez, it really shows you how important it is.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what about, how does attachment get fixed? You know, it seems like there's such a narrow window of opportunity that attachment happens. So can it be fixed? How do you work with that? How do you guys work to try to fix it?
Mm-hmm. It absolutely can be fixed. I don't think that I would be able to work in this field if I didn't believe in that magic ingredient of resiliency. I think that as human beings, we are amazingly resilient. And as humans, we crave social interaction. We crave having connections with other people. And so, you know, there's that critical period when there's an infant, and whether or not they were in an orphanage overseas, or if they were in a home that wasn't nurturing them, wasn't taking care of them physiologically and psychologically, they start to develop more of a neurotic disposition. They start to feel like their needs aren't going to be taken care of. And so as that escalates into their adulthood and developing through adolescence, we see the two different types of the reactive attachment disorder. And the one side is the inhibited. So they never really had a chance to create those neural pathways that teach them how to react in social situations. And so as they go through elementary school, junior high, high school, they're not connecting with their peers. They're not connecting with their parents. And so when we see reactive attachment disorder, the inhibited type in teenage girls, they're very shy, very introverted. They have their guard up all the time. They don't feel, they don't know how to connect with other people. And the other side of that, of the reactive attachment disorder, is the disinhibited. And that side is the girls who, they don't have that gut feeling of, I shouldn't trust this person. And they latch on to anyone and everyone that they feel that they can connect with or that will love them. And so that gets really, really dangerous when you have a super cute teenage girl who's out there searching for love, and you have lots of bad boyfriends that will step right in and give them that missing piece.
Oh yeah, trouble can be had there.
Yes.
Now, I loved your examples of the Charlie Brown characters as far as the different attachment styles. Can you just share with the audience, you know, who represents which style? Because I think the audience can get a really clear picture as far as what you're talking about.
Right. Well, with when you're working with teenagers, you have to find a way to be creative and find ways that they will pay attention to these psychological concepts that you're trying to teach them about. And so I found this table online. And, you know, when you look at the four different attachment styles, there's the one attachment style, it's the healthy attachment, which is secure. And then we have the preoccupied, which is someone who is often preoccupied with other people, can look like codependency, can look like some borderline personality characteristics. The third one is the dismissive personality. So that looks a little bit like some of the access to disorders of narcissism, antisocial, more avoidant type disorders. And then the fourth one, which is usually what turns out with reactive attachment disorder, is that more avoidant, fearful type of personality. So someone had developed this Charlie Brown chart that I thought was so perfect, because when you have someone who's feels good about other people and they feel good about themselves, they have that secure attachment. And so he had put Peppermint Patty in that part there. So Peppermint Patty's, she's good with relationships, she's good with making connections, but she's also okay doing things on her own and having that autonomy. The preoccupied style, that would be Lucy. You know, Lucy's always chasing Linus. She's always preoccupied with other people rather than on herself. We always joke that Lucy needs to go to a Codependency Anonymous meeting to try to get some help for that. And then Schroeder is in the dismissive category, because Schroeder just wants to play his piano. He's not interested in other relationships. He's not interested in cultivating social interactions with other people. And then poor Charlie Brown, he would be in that more fearful, avoidant category, because Charlie Brown is always having everything bad always happens to him. So one of my favorite definitions of attachment is that it's the subconscious reflexive prediction of other people's behaviors. So when you have attachment issues, you're always sort of predicting how other people are going to treat you on down the road. And so when you look at Charlie Brown, and when you look at some of these girls who have been neglected, been abused, they haven't grown up in loving, nurturing families, that's all they have to look back at. That's all they have to judge future experiences by. So they automatically go into some of these relationships with this unconscious prediction that people are going to treat them bad. So I'm not going to let anybody in. I'm not going to get close to anybody.
Gotcha. I love those examples. Now let's go back to your school. And it's typically for teenage girls 13 to 17 years of age.
Yes.
And what is a typical day like for your students there?
Well, since we are a college prep academy, they have classes Monday through Friday. So they go to class from about 8 to 2:30, and we have a phenomenal academic program. We have everything from getting elective credits for yoga to a women's lit class. We have Shakespeare, all of the science classes there. And our academic director is really phenomenal. He works so hard with all of the schools around the country to make sure that they to make sure that their credits are going to transfer over to their school when they get back. Just recently we had some of our girls who were in our Shakespeare class, they took a trip up to the Utah Shakespeare Festival and competed with other high schools from around the country doing Shakespeare plays. So our academic director does everything he can to try to make school fun.
Ooh, nice.
So a typical day is going to school, and then at 2:30, normally they have a group therapy session, and then they head back to their dorms, and they have exercise, and the exercise program is also really phenomenal. We have an amazing Zumba teacher that comes on campus to teach Zumba, and he he actually has gone on tour with Pitbull before, so the girls are very, very excited about that, that he can come and teach them hip-hop moves and all this fun stuff. And then they head back to their dorms, and the dorm environment is, it really is like a family. You know, they're living with other girls, they're living with girls who have issues similar to them, and so while they're doing that, it's all very therapeutic, because they have to practice their distress tolerance skills, they have to practice their emotional regulation, because they are in environments that difficult things come up. But the dorm supervisors and the residential staff, they do their best to really make it feel like a family, like a nurturing environment where they can come back to their house and they can relax and rest and get ready for the next day.
Ooh, nice. Now, how many students are typically there?
We usually have from about 70 to 90. So we have three different houses on campus, and each house has approximately 30 girls in it. And it's really cute because they have sort of their school spirit. They have their house spirit. They have competitions between houses and things like that.
And how long do they normally stay?
The average length of stay is about a year.
Ooh, okay.
Now, with meeting their minimums, working through the level system that we have here, it is possible for girls to graduate in 8 months from our program.
Wow.
But we usually don't tell them or the parents that from day one, because otherwise at 7.5 months, they're getting ready to go home. So my typical answer is that it's about a year, because usually that's what it takes for girls to have some difficulties, to have some ups and downs, to move up to a certain phase and then not be able to resist a temptation or to make a mistake. And then they go back down and have to work their way back up to that phase again. So it's about a year typical.
So how do the families get involved with your program?
We have quite a bit of parental involvement. One time we had added it up and it came out to over 600 hours of family therapy, family involvement that they do. So we have every other week they have their family therapy. Now, if the family is close or if the family is able to fly over, we do that in person. Otherwise, it is on the phone or over Skype. And besides that, we have our parent workshops. And so the parents come out for a 3-day workshop three times during their daughter's stay here. And the parent workshops are really phenomenal because they're based on the Arbinger Institute on the anatomy of peace and working with the same language that the girls are working with here. And it's a really creative way to teach families about what happens when you have dysfunctional dynamics in a family. And it's about not creating blame and looking at each other as people and not objects, and helping them to work with the same language without stigmatizing it at the same time.
Okay, now how do they, you said you transfer the credits. Is there any problems in transferring those high school credits that they receive there to the schools, their home school?
No.
Okay, good.
No. And our academic director, Ken, he's been here for about 12 years. And so I think that by now he's had a girl from every state in the United States. And so he knows down pat what needs to happen. There are a couple schools that have a little bit more or a couple states, I should say, that have a little bit more stringent rules. And so when that happens, he figures out what he needs to do, whether have an extra home study to add or whatever needs to happen to make sure that they'll continue moving forward with their credits towards graduation.
Now, is it difficult transitioning home for some of these students?
It is, but we really make sure that we have a lot of safety nets in place for these families. A lot of times when we have girls come to us, it is when we've had parents with the best of the intentions, best intentions, it just goes wrong somewhere along the way. You know, sometimes we have parents that really need some coaching and some help with their parenting styles. And other times we have parents who are doing everything they can and probably stepping a little bit more into that enabling enmeshment side of things. And so we work really closely with the families to get those healthy dynamics back and sort of helping them to figure out how to parent. And so before the girls start going on home visits, we have workshops where the parents come here and we come up with the entire family rules system. And so they know exactly, if I'm 5 minutes late for my curfew, they know exactly what's going to happen and have everything lined out for them. And before they go home, they get to practice. So they go home for 3 9-day home visits. And there are a lot of girls who zoom right through their program and do phenomenally. And then as soon as they get back home, where there are boys and Facebook and all of these temptations that they haven't had while they were here, all of a sudden all these issues start coming up. So having them go home and have those home visits is so important because they get to practice that before they're just sort of dropped into their home environment again.
Great. Now, what about, how do parents know when it's normal teenage issues or when a school like yours would really be helpful? When are parents in over their head? How can they tell?
That's a really great question, because coming from a psychologist who specializes in attachment issues, I really feel like we need to make sure that we've done everything that we can in the home before taking a step like this. So I won't answer that there are two different sides of that coin. So a lot of times there are families who come to us and they have already tried everything. They've started with the outpatient. They've started with having an individual therapist. They've maybe had a couple hospitalizations, whether it be for suicidal ideation or self-harm. They've tried everything they can, and they're starting to feel like they can't keep their daughter safe. She's running away, she's using drugs, or she's refusing to go to school and starting to flunk out of high school. They've really gotten to that point where they feel that they are going to lose their daughter, that they are at a point where they need help. They need to send her somewhere to get that extra help. So those are the more extreme cases that it's like, get her here as soon as possible so that we can get her on the right track. On the other hand, there are often families who come to us and their daughter has been doing fairly well and just really quickly started to go down the wrong path. Maybe they've, you know, through their eighth grade year, freshman, sophomore, were getting good grades. They were involved in sports. They were doing everything that a parent would hope that their daughter would do. And all of a sudden, bad boyfriend tries meth. Or starts running away and not coming home and takes a drastic turn really quickly. And those are the types of situations that the parents say, we're not going to try outpatient. We're not going to sit and wait for this to get worse. We're going to nip it in the bud and get her somewhere away from the boyfriend, somewhere where we know that she's going to be safe, going to be able to continue on with her schooling, and to be able to get the help that she needs for those emotional issues.
Right. It's so important to get outside of that environment.
Yeah.
Now, what about, is it difficult to get into your school?
I wouldn't say that it's difficult, but we want to make sure that the girls that we accept are girls who are going to be successful. We don't want parents to spend their money and for it not to be the right fit. So there are a couple things that we usually would recommend going to a higher level of care for. And some of those things are if the girl has an active eating disorder, that's something that our environment here isn't prepared to work with. If someone has an active eating disorder, they need to be in a program where they have 24/7 medical attention to make sure that they're staying healthy as far as their weight goes.
Gotcha. Now, where can they find you at? Your website.
Oh, it's coppercanyonacademy.com.
Okay, that makes it easy.
Yeah.
Well, gosh, is there anything else you want to tell us about your school? I want to come.
I know. there are a couple other things that I think are really set us apart from any other therapeutic boarding school or residential treatment. we have a transition house here on campus, and each girl goes and stays in the transition house for 6 weeks before she graduates the program. And we have a wonderful transition mom that lives in the house there, and she, you know, is in her early 30s and has a couple tattoos, so the girls think that she's really cool and somebody that they can relate to. And while they live there in the transition house, they make their own meals. They can stay up a little bit later. They can watch regular TV. So it's just another step that we have there to ensure that they're ready to go home when the time comes. Some other things are that we have competitive sports programs here. So if we have girls that come in who were, you know, star of their basketball team or really soccer was really important to them, we do have those teams that go out and compete around the state of Arizona with other schools. Which is really important.
It's awesome. Gosh, it's been so great talking to you and all the cool things up there. So I'm also going to have show notes, so which will summarize some of the things we've talked about. It'll also have links to your, you know, to your school and your program there up at Copper Canyon. So I just want to thank you again for talking to us and my audience. They're going to love hearing all about it.
Thanks, Pam. I appreciate it. And if anyone wants to go onto the website and get the contact information and just call the school. Again, my name is Stevie Stanford, and our admissions director, his name is Paul Ravenscraft. And either one of us would be happy to talk about your case, if it's therapists or if a parent's calling about their daughter, and just sort of talk about if it would be the right fit, if it's something you're looking on down the road, or if it's more of an emergent issue. We can just sort of talk and see if it's going to be a fit for each girl.
Okay. Thank you, Stevie, again for coming and sharing with our audience all the stuff you offer.
Thanks, Pam. I love bragging about it. So anytime.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, everybody. I hope my audience has a better idea now on how to make smarter choices for their families for a happier life. I hope you enjoyed that interview with Dr. Stevie Stanford. The show notes, resources, and links will be there on the blog on my website. So for a quick link, check it out at www.pamelachambers.com/session2. Also, don't forget, please sign up for my newsletter, and you can receive my resources for my 5 favorite apps in helping your child develop their emotional IQ. Remember, you can't improve your intellectual aptitude, but you can improve your emotional aptitude. Again, thank you so much, you guys, for spending time with me and Dr. Stevie Stanford. I can't wait to share with you what I have in session 3. We are going to be talking to Dr. Lynn Kinney, and she is a family coach here in Arizona. She will be talking with us about enhancing your child's executive functioning, social and academic skills, and motor movement. So Dr. Kinney's new book with Wendy Young is titled Bloom, Helping Children Blossom. She will be with us in a couple weeks, so keep checking for that podcast. Until then, you guys, keep listening for smart choices for a happier life. Love, peace, and let's talk. This is Pam Chambers signing off.
Thanks for listening to Smart Choices for a Happier Life at PamelaChambers.com. Wishes for you to have a blessed day.
Wishes for you to have a blessed day.